This is the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. Her book, Eat, Pray, Love, was translated into over 30 languages and made into a feature film, and she was named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine. Now Elizabeth Gilbert has a new nonfiction treatise out called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Gilbert to the Book Club at 91.7. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Mark. It's lovely to be here.
I wanted to ask how the success of Eat, Pray, Love led to Big Magic, because I kind of, as I was reading the book, could see where that success and the people you encountered along the way kind of inspired this book, Big Magic.
Yeah, very much so. You know, I've spent the Eat, Pray, Love came out, I can't even believe it, but 10 years ago.
Yes.
And so I've spent a decade kind of on the road. And along the way, I've met a lot of people who are doing and making really interesting creative things with their lives. But I more often meet people who want to be and they aren't. And when you ask them why they're not doing the thing that they really want to be doing or following their curiosity or exploring their creativity, they usually have very good material world reasons for why they can't be doing that. But if you start to scratch away at those reasons, at the bottom of it, it appears to me that it's always fear. And especially in women, there's a sort of deep absence of entitlement, a deep absence of what the poet David White calls the arrogance of belonging, you know, the sense that you are not just here to be a bystander, but you're also allowed to be a participant, that you're allowed to put a thumbprint on the world if you want, that you're allowed to express yourself. And so I felt like it would be really an interesting thing to kind of write a book that's a response to those people who I meet and to their very specific questions and anxieties that they have about creativity.
I was very inspired by your definition of creative living, and I'd like you to share with listeners how you define what creative living is. It's not just being a painter or a poet. It's really an approach to life, if you may.
It's a way of being, you know, more than it is what exactly you're making. And the way of being, the way I define it, is that a creatively lived life is any life where your choices are guided more strongly by curiosity than by fear.
In this creative living, the creative life, you also say it's not, I love the story you early in the book lay out in Big Magic, where you talk about this woman who later in her years decides to take up figure skating again. And she didn't quit her job. She didn't move on. And it's not like giving everything up to change your life entirely, correct?
Right. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think another reason that people don't allow themselves to express their creativity or follow their curiosity is they have this idea, and it's probably reinforced by a very sort of dramatic tendency in America for, like, totally change your life overnight. You know, they have this idea that they have to quit their job and get divorced and sell their house and, I don't know, move to Paris, shave their head, open an orphanage, like do very dramatic things.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, sometimes, you know, you'd be amazed what the smallest invitation into your life of creativity and curiosity can bring. And the story that I tell is about a dear friend of mine who, around the age of 40, just found herself just feeling drab and plain and lost and bored and stagnated. And she did one of those big interviews you do with yourself on the big birthdays. And she asked herself, when was the last time she had felt truly free and light and even creative in her skin? And to her horror, she realized she hadn't felt that way since she was a teenager, when she used to be a pretty serious figure skater. She had studied figure skating for a long time, but she had quit when it became apparent to her, and she was also told that she would never be a champion, right? And so, you know, the American way is, if you can't be the best at it, why do it? You know, what other possible reason could you have to do something other than to win? You know, and so she had quit, and she'd never really kind of been the same person since. And so in her 40s, she took it up again. And she had a demanding day job. She had relationships. She had, you know, real responsibilities in the real world. And she kept up with all of those. She just, 3 mornings a week, got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And before she went off to her busy life, she found a coach and a skating rink, and she would go there 3 times a week, and she would skate. And the story doesn't end with her winning, you know, like moving to Toronto and, you know, hiring an Olympic coach and skating 70 hours a week and winning a trophy. The story doesn't even end. She still does this 3 mornings a week. All she gets out of it is merely a much better life, you know, like a happier right. life. It was a revolution for her. And it's a small thing, but it's a huge thing. So I'm always telling people, it doesn't have to be as dramatic as you may think.
I'm talking with Elizabeth Gilbert. She's the best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love. Her new book is Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And you break Big Magic into six sections, Elizabeth. Of course, beginning with courage, but then there's enchantment and permission, persistence, trust, and divinity. Six sections. And in the enchantment section, you tell a story about Ann Patchett, a fellow writer, and you talk about a moment that was big magic. And was that where the title of the book came from?
Yeah, it pretty much did. I mean, that moment was the biggest big magic I've ever experienced in my creative life. And it's such a delightful story. I'll try to summarize it here quickly. But I was at one time working on a novel that I had a book deal for and a contract for, and I'd been working on it for months. And to summarize very quickly, the novel was going to be about this woman who's a sort of lonely spinster in Minnesota in her 40s, has worked for the same company for years, is quietly and hopelessly in love with her married boss. Her boss gets involved in some money-making scheme down in the Amazon jungle. A bunch of money and a person go missing, and he sends her down, his trusted secretary, to sort it all out, at which point her life is turned into upheaval and chaos and drama. For a lot of reasons I won't go into right now, I ended up putting that book aside to deal with some other stuff that was going on in my life. And when I came back to it 2 years later, the only way I can describe the feeling is the book wasn't there anymore. You know, there was a life force in the idea, and the life force was gone, and I just couldn't seem to bring it back to life. And around that same time, I made friends with the wonderful American novelist Ann Patchett, and she and I had this great electrifying meeting where we sort of fell in love as friends and admirers. And a few months after that meeting, she told me she just started working on a book, and it was about the Amazon jungle. And in fact, it was about a lonely spinster from Minnesota who's been working for the same company for 20 years, who's quietly and desperately in love with her married boss, who gets involved in a big money-making scheme in the Amazon, and a bunch of money and a person go missing, and she gets sent down to sort it all out, at which point her quiet life is turned into drama and chaos. It was exactly the same story, and that, of course, became her beautiful novel, State of Wonder. But we had this great moment sitting there across the table having this conversation and realizing that, you know, what we like to think anyway is that the idea, you know, got the feeling I wasn't really serious about it. Met a novelist. Met a novelist who was, and jumped out of my mind and into hers. And we had actually given each other a big kiss when we met, so we like to think that it was exchanged virus-like in the kiss. So be careful who you kiss when you have an idea that you're working on. But to me, it just spoke to a kind of confirmation of the craziest magical thinking I've always had about creativity, which is the sense that ideas long to be made, and they search the world looking for human collaborators. They don't care if it's you or me or who. They just want to be made. And like lightning, they seek the swiftest conduit to the earth, and try to become that conduit is the way to live a creative life, right? Try to be ready and available and disciplined and receptive to ideas when they arrive. Otherwise, they'll go find somebody else. But there's always more. There's always another one, so you don't have to panic when the idea leaves you. Just have to ask for the next one.
Well, you know, what struck me as I was reading Big Magic was the section on persistence. And I think that's where a lot of people, in the face of adversity, they become discouraged and dismayed, mm-hmm. and will give up that pursuit. Talk about the persistence part of trying to pursue a creative life.
You know, it's essential, but I also think it's misunderstood. I think oftentimes people are preached an idea of discipline, right? That you have to, you know, in order for anything good to come in your life, you got to have discipline, you got to have discipline, you got to have discipline. Discipline is a word, whenever I hear it, all I see are like the fingernail scratches in the wall of the hole that someone's trying to dig themselves out of, that they're killing. You know, all I see is the anxiety and the struggle and the impossibility. Discipline isn't what gets the work done. What gets the work done is a tremendous sense of self-forgiveness, which is an underestimated virtue in the creative life. We all begin our big, excited creative project on day one with the same amount of thrill and anticipation and hope. And we all, on day two, go back and look at what we wrote or painted or composed on day one, and we hate ourselves because it's not good. And because it falls so far short of what we want it to be. The difference between the person who returns to the work on day three and the person who doesn't is that the person on, who returns to it has abandoned perfectionism, is not going to beat themselves up for not being good enough, and has forgiven themselves for being merely mortal, and just says, all right, well, look, I'm going to just keep doing my best here. I never said this would be good. I never said I'd ready. I can't tell you how many times I've come back to a book project because I just literally say out loud to whoever's listening in the empty room, I never said I was going to be a great writer. I just said I was going to be a writer. So, you know, I'm doing my part of the contract here. I'm showing up again. And that's not discipline. That's humanity, right? That's empathy toward the self. That's just letting yourself off the hook for never being as great as you want to be.
Elizabeth Gilbert, her new book is Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And we go through trust, and I have to say, Elizabeth, what a reward at the end of Big Magic, where I came to the last chapter in conclusion, half page long, but boy, there is a lot there. In that half page, beginning with creativity is sacred and it is not sacred. And this page is, as you say, a bunch of paradoxes. And that's kind of what a creative life is.
It's nothing but paradox. you have to make a lot of space in your mind for the paradoxes of creativity if you want to live a creative life. And foremost among them is that first line, that it is sacred and it is not sacred, that what you make matters and it doesn't matter. And you have to oftentimes leap between the distance of those paradoxes within 1 minute of each other, right? Like, so when I'm working on a book, each sentence I have to approach it as if the fate of mankind depends upon getting that sentence right. And then 2 minutes later, you know, that thing that I just decided was the most important thing that's ever been written in the whole history of humanity, I may have to just throw it out and be like, never mind, and toss it to the dogs. And then I may have to, 2 minutes later, dig it up again and be like, no, it is important. So you're sort of going back and forth between, you know, this thing matters and it doesn't matter. You know, it's a weird pursuit. It is a fundamentally, completely irrational thing for a human being to try to create something out of nothing. It's a very weird thing to do. What you're doing when you decide to embark on a project is you're saying, I'm going to take the greatest treasure I have, which is my time, my limited mortal time of my life force energy, and I'm going to pour it for an enormous amount of energy and time and trouble into making something that no one wants, that no one asked me to do, that no one needs. Like, the world doesn't need another novel. It doesn't need another painting. It doesn't need another poem. It doesn't need another song. And yet we are called continually to return to this sense. And I don't want to do anything with my life except engage in that weird irrational behavior, because nothing brings me to life more and nothing makes me feel more like I'm here to do more than just, you know, pay bills and die. I'm also here to be strange.
Well, Elizabeth, I know I have learned many lessons as I was reading Big Magic, and many I hope to put into practice. But what lesson did you, Elizabeth, learn while writing Big Magic?
You know, for me, this book is a manifesto. And I got to tell you, if you ever have the chance to write a manifesto, do it, because it's very fun. It's very, you know, all of my other books, I feel like, have been big questions, you know, like, what is marriage? What is spirituality? How are we to engage with it? And this one isn't. This one is just me kind of standing in my lived experience of 25 years of engaging with creativity and very kind of insistently saying, this is how you do it, right? Like, this is how it's done. It's very it's dogmatic in its own way. And it's very fun to write like that. I'd probably never do it again. But when I threw that down, you know, it really was a throwdown to myself as well to say, okay, now you're laying this out that this is how to do things. You better be smoking what you're selling, Gilbert. Like, you better make sure that you are always following the path of curiosity more than the path of fear, that you are believing in mysticism and pragmatism at the same time, that you're living by this stuff. And so I feel like ever since I wrote it, I've just been stepping up my creativity because I feel like you will have no authority to put this book out in the world if you don't dare to sing karaoke in public, take a dance class, write poetry, which I've never done. And so when I find myself saying, oh, I'm scared of, I'm not really that kind of a, I don't do that, I'm like, come on. You know, you're telling people that they have to do this, you have to do it too. So I think for me, it's been a sort of doubling down on my own creative process.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth, for your time this morning. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. My great pleasure talking to you, Mark. Have a great morning.
Elizabeth Gilbert, her new book is Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. You can learn more about the best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love and her new book at our website, wbxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7. Been listening to the Book Club at 91.7, which, by the way, celebrates its first anniversary tomorrow. Technical director for the show is Rick Andres, producer is Kevin Reynolds, assistant producer is Catherine Cunningham, web guru is Jim Nolan, and I'm Mark Purcell. Just 7 days away from Books by the Banks, so next Saturday morning, Sandy Bullock will have a rundown of the latest lineup of workshops and panels so you can plan your visit to the Cincinnati USA Book Festival, and a celebration of the father of science fiction. This year is the 150th anniversary of the book From the Earth to the Moon by Jules Verne. And Dean Regas will talk about the author and how the Cincinnati Observatory is marking the occasion. And Brian Taves outlines Verne's influence on Hollywood, which is the subject of his new book. I hope you'll be here too for the Book Club at 91.7 next Saturday morning. Have a super Saturday and stay tuned for Weekend Edition on WBXU.